Hello, everybody.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my co-host, Barbara, here. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
Good. Now, our guest today is Mercy Smiles. And the thing that's interesting that I've heard about you is you survived being in a religious cult. Am I accurate in saying that?
Absolutely. Yes, you're so right, Jonathan. That's exactly
right. That
must
have
been rough. Hi, Mercy.
Hi, Barbara.
Yes, we are both so excited to talk to you about this. I mean, it is an intense subject. So, we are so glad that you're on the show today.
It was a very intense experience.
Wow. Well, was this before or after your college education? Because I was reading about you, and, I mean, maybe you learned a lot from that experience and then went back to school, but I just would like to know the order in your life, how things happened.
So a lot of people think that if you got caught up in a cult, then more than likely, you know, you don't have any education, you're not smart enough. But really, it's the opposite of what the data is, and I don't know the exact data. People with education, professionals, executives fall prey to cults just as much as anybody would. And so there is a recipe. There's a perfect recipe why somebody will fall into a cult. And so just to answer your question, Barbara, this was after my degree. This was after I became a qualified social worker. And so I worked as a professional.
Maybe that is why you were able to see the craziness or whatever you experienced there, you were able to see when maybe other people were not able to, because, you know, you studied people, basically.
Well, I wish that really helped me at the time, but it didn't. It worked against me because of my social work background. My name is Mercy, so that alludes to that I'm very merciful, and so I can deal with a lot of abuse because I'm very merciful. I'm very forgiving of others. I think the best of people.
Yes. Well,
I was going to comment on what you said about educated people being all the cults. You know, it's sort of funny because, like, there's another, there's a cult that I refer to called Westboro Baptist Church. And they, you know, are very, very legally savvy. Like, they're the kind of people that will, you know, like, it's like what they'll do is they picketed a funeral of an head soldier, and they went to the Supreme Court and they won their case. So obviously, you know, they're savvy enough to be able to do that. Now, if they had a ninth grade education, there's no way they could win their case, because it would be like everything would be, they wouldn't know what to do. They would be like, well, wait a minute, you can't do that. That's against the law. You know, oh, okay. I mean, they're very smart about it.
Common.
They know enough to.
Right.
What?
So I hear what you say, that they're very common, very grounded.
Yeah, very smart.
Well, so Mercy saying, okay, it does not have to do with education or how smart you are at all. Anybody could be pulled into this trap. So tell us, what can you tell us what this cult was and your experience?
Absolutely. So this cult was called Array of Hope Ministries, and they're based in Georgia and Texas. They kind of move around. But I just wanted to pick up on what you said about educated people. Well, one of the things about educated people is that they have a lot of value to bring, and they have assets. And so that's something that cult leaders are looking for, is to rob people of their assets. So, you know, if they're middle class, smart executives, they're more than likely they're homeowners. They have a home.
Right.
They have a well-paying job. These are all things that the cult needs in order to survive and thrive. And so, you know, there is some things that they're looking for in order to build. And so not to say that someone who doesn't have any of those things have nothing to offer, but they have something else to offer. Maybe labor in the church, the ministry, or the cult group. They can give off their labor and be enslaved, but they are looking for people that can add value.
Well, that is
sorry.
Making sense, and that is not surprising, but it also is sad because a religious organization should be only thinking of helping. I mean, of course, you have to think about yourself to survive and put their food on their plate, but not really trying to seek people out to suck, you know, whatever they can out of the person. And so is that what you, did you ever feel that? Or how long did it take you to notice some negative signs from this group?
Good question. So initially, it's difficult to say, but initially they do love bomb you. So initially you're going to experience a lot of love, a lot of nurturing. They're very caring individuals. They're very likable, extremely charismatic, and will woo you over. It's like that honeymoon period. And so they're very skillful and very artful about how they do that. And they have a way of picking up your personality and your weaknesses and the things that you're really looking for in terms of a need. And they know how to fulfill that need, especially like an emotional need. Just in the same way that gangs do. With gangs, you know, they'll prey on young boys that don't have a father in the house so that they can present their organization as a brotherly, bigger brother, father looking out for son kind of a bonding relationship. They make sure they intertwine that with everything else, and that's the part that they want so bad that it's hard for them to leave. So you asked me, when did I see some of the bad stuff? So I would say probably like 4 months in. But because there was an internal need for love, there was a need to be validated, a need to be accepted, a need to be mentored. Like I really wanted to be mentored, and I wanted to get closer to God. And so because I had that need, and they had the time to mentor because it was a strategy. And so they worked very hard So, say that again?
I have a question. It does seem that, in my opinion, I was, it's so funny because we don't know what the definition of a cult is, because cults, you know, religions, or they're all kind of a little strange. I do think that it becomes a cult when it starts to interfere with your relationships with people outside the cult or outside the religious organization, like, you know, having friends and I mean, obviously, if this were a cult, like, obviously my guess is they probably stopped you from having friends, right? Outside the religious cult.
Correct.
Yeah, see, and when they stop you from doing that, that is a problem. Because I always hear it's like,
correct,
oh, my brother-in-law, he went and he joined the religious cult, and I can't get in touch with him, you know. I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
Correct.
It's, Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's exactly what they do, and that's called isolation. So they work very hard to isolate you from your friends and your family, your network, your support network, your social network, your professional network. That's the only way that they will be able to possess you and have power over you. And so one of the things is that they're very jealous of your connection with other people. As long as you have contact with people outside of the group, then they don't have control. And that's a major issue, because their whole premise is they have to gain control. That's what they want. And so control over whether or not you want to go back to school, whether or not you want to get a job, all these things will block their plans if they don't control you. So they work systematically, like you said, to control every area of your life so that you won't have any outside influence that will oppose any decisions that they make about your life. So, for instance, I wanted to go back to school, and it was a big issue. It was a big issue for me to go back to school. In fact, it was a big issue, the fact that I wanted to work. It was a major issue. I mean, you'd think like I was doing something like terribly bad, okay, like committing a crime or something, okay? But in their eyes, I was. It was almost like, oh, if you want to do that, you're not going to be able to last. You're not going to be able to cope out there. The world is a bad place. You need to stay safe in here. That's not what God is saying. And see, when they begin to bring God into it, that's when you're like, oh, maybe they know more than I know. And that's when you really cower in and really just like, okay, and just give in. And so that would happen repeatedly with me, repeatedly, and everybody else, you know, wanting, you know, having aspirations, and you've been told, no, you can't do it. No, you can't pursue your passions. Okay?
How often do you go to their meetings? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mercy. I just, as you're talking, I am envisioning all of this. And so is it a big meeting, how often, or do they house people? Like,
they house the
atmosphere.
People.
Oh.
Correct. They house people, and they also have meetings too. So the meetings, I'm going to say maybe like 3 days a week or something like that.
That's a lot.
Like 3 days a week.
What is their base? I mean, are they Jesus believers or what?
Yeah, they believe in Jesus. They believe in Jesus. How I explain it, or how I've come to understand what happened is, and the thing is, if you met them today, you'd say they're really nice people.
It's a grooming. You know, it's the system, like you said, but it's like a grooming. You know, they probably deal with everybody differently. They find out.
Yeah.
Who knows, with the interview, the first interview, all of your wants, passions, things that are bothering you. I mean, they find out your deepest, darkest secrets, and then they go to work on you. And it's so scary.
It is scary because they are very innocent looking. They're actually seniors. So we're talking about young blood. They're senior citizens.
I still didn't catch that.
Oh, they're senior
citizens.
So they're like, senior citizens. Yeah.
That's everybody over 65. Senior citizens, and
the leadership, yeah. So
right.
They're very
mothering
and very, you respect your elders, and, you know, you expect them to know.
Right.
So that that's all, that all plays into it. They're very, you know, like a mother, auntie, like a grandmother, nurturing,
right,
but very twisted and very controlling.
Okay, what is
you
their
know,
goal,
and,
though, with you? What is their end goal with a member? What are they trying to do? What would be their main end result that they're going to, yay, I got them, I got them? I mean, why?
Their heart is to continue to spread the gospel. So they have a heart to spread the gospel and build their vision. They're very committed to their vision and very devoted, and they want to continue to expand and build people. So their whole philosophy is we're building and mentoring people so that they can become leaders and they can go off and preach and teach. And so that sounds all good, but their methodology behind it is extremely controlling, manipulative, and domineering. And so how I made sense of it, because I didn't see none of this. Like you said, how did I know? I didn't see most of it until I left. I just didn't see it. I couldn't see it, and I didn't see it. Okay, I just knew something was off. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. And, of course, in that process, I was actually numb in that process. I was zombified. I was numb. Okay, so I had checked out. So in other words, I was already depressed. Depression had already sunk in. Okay, because you're living, but you're not allowed to live. And to the extent where I even had a meeting with her, and I said to her, I've been praying that God kills you.
Oh.
And the reason why I've been praying that is because I can't live with you being alive. That's how controlled I felt.
Wow.
And yet in that statement, leaving was not an option. It was not an option. It didn't come into my mind. It was like the only way I can actually live as a human being on this earth is if one of us dies. And she's older, can't she die? So And I'm saying this because this was actually a confession. I felt guilty. I felt terrible. I confessed it to her and said, I feel really bad. I shouldn't be thinking these thoughts. Because they had a system of you always confessing your sins.
Oh.
So you never,
okay, so
you never could
wait,
really.
What did she say? What was her response when you said that to her?
She didn't say anything. She didn't say anything. It didn't mean
maybe
anything.
Maybe she was not surprised. Maybe she was not surprised.
Yeah. It didn't mean anything.
After you left, did you see anybody else that... I'm sorry for the interruption. I was going to ask you, did anybody else, after you left, did you find anybody who had made bad comments about them too and had escaped?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
how did you find
even
them?
When I left, a lot of people left because I left, because I was one of the leaders and one of her very close leaders. Okay. And so I did things that wasn't right neither. Okay. Because I was that close to them and they would ask me to instruct people. So I wasn't right neither, okay? And so when I left, I had to call a lot of people and just really apologize and say that was not me. I was under her thumb and I did a lot of things and I was not fully awake and I allowed myself to be controlled and I said things and I did things that was not right. It was not kosher. It just was not right. And so I called a lot of people on the phone and actually apologized to them and repented to them and said, please forgive me. Okay, please forgive me. I was wrong, and that's not me. I'm a new person now. I've got away from them. So if you know, if we have a relationship, just know I've got nothing to do with them, and I don't think that way no more. And so I really had to, when I left, I really went through a process of deprogramming. I had to deprogram myself from a lot of the ideology and the way they believed. I had to get rid of a lot of things. Like, for example, I couldn't wear black. Black represented death, so I couldn't wear black. So I got rid of a lot of my clothes. I couldn't go to a gas station. And you know how they're numbered at the gas station? If it was not, if I pulled up at number 6, I would have to move. If I was in the supermarket and I pulled up at number 6, checkout number, I would have to leave.
Why?
So there was a lot of rules because they had a system of what was right and what was wrong. And so all these things represented something negative. And so I couldn't go to number 6.
So this,
because they believed that number 6 represented like death and destruction. So I couldn't go to number 6 because then there'll be a ripple effect at the with the ministry, and it will have an effect on everybody else.
How did you handle, say, the month of June?
Oh, month of June was incredibly, like, difficult.
Because
incredibly
June
difficult.
Is the 6 months.
Correct.
Of the year.
Yeah, it was a very difficult month for us. I don't subscribe to that feeling and thinking, but June was like, oh, no. It was like, get ready for war. Like, June is just going to be the worst ever. Like, just, you know, we had to even prepare for you.
Oh, wow. Did you enter with anybody else or just completely alone?
I actually got a few people in there.
Oh.
And, you know, I felt guilty for years because I got a lot of people involved. I'm sorry?
Did you get them, did you take them out, though? Did you try to help them out when you left?
Some of them, yes, and some no. Some did not want to leave,
so
but some did.
They were
hurt.
And
yeah, they
okay,
were
so
too.
Do you, okay, they obviously hurt you. I mean, emotionally, they did when you were saying that you had to do all of those things, and you were so triggered by many things afterwards. So they did hurt you so much. What else did they do? Were they able to suck out money or? Did you almost move
in?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
All of that. All of that. And
what
just
about
not me, too.
Because, you know, maybe they tried to get you to work for them as well. Did they try to get you to speak or be a leader?
Oh, yeah. So I was a leader, and that's one of the reasons why they didn't want me working or doing anything else. They wanted my life for them. I was to work for them. Like, I didn't have a life outside. They didn't recognize that, nor would they acknowledge it, because their mind or thinking was, you were sent to us for a reason and to help us to build our ministry.
Like,
so
you're just a disciple for them.
Say it again?
Like, they wanted you just to be a disciple. Like a disciple,
correct.
Like
correct.
In the Bible.
Correct. Correct. Exactly. That was the end goal, and that was their vision.
A career. They, you know, what if somebody had a very great career that they built for many years and entered into that religious group, and then they quit their job and they never could get it back? I mean, that would be a pretty bad career ruin right there.
Oh, but that happened. Oh, that happened.
Oh,
that happened. I remember there was an older gentleman. He was doing his, I believe it was a master's. I don't think it was a PhD. I think it was a master's. And he had his thesis to do. Just one piece of work. It was his thesis and I believe an exam. And she discouraged him from finishing it. And, you know, he was having a hard time. He's like, no, I believe God is telling me I need to finish what I've started. And she was just pressuring him, saying, nope, that's not what God is saying. God is saying that you're not supposed to do that. You were supposed to learn from the course, but you wasn't supposed to gain the qualification because that's going to make you prideful. And so nobody wants to be called prideful. So she would play on that and just make, you know, one feel really guilty by her assassinating your character.
Oh, yeah, they could. And so I am wondering if you're afraid because they seem so controlling and they don't want to be exposed at all. So are you ever afraid to say their name of their organization and of retaliation maybe by them?
Well, yeah, this is the first time that I've actually said their name. This is the first time for me. And so it is challenging. I'll tell you the truth. It is challenging. It is. But people need to know this. I know, you know, even when I left, somebody put something out there on Facebook, and everything they said, I agree with it. It wasn't me. I don't even know who did it. But there was other people that was aware, and somebody said they need to be exposed. And so, you know, people are still getting caught up in that organization even to today. Even with them getting elderly, they haven't changed. And I really believe that they're narcissists, they're sociopaths, because there is no feeling. Like I said, when I told her, you know what, I've been praying for God to kill you just so that I can, because I can't physically breathe. I feel so controlled. They don't flinch. There's no flinching. There's no remorse. There's no, well, I'm really sorry. There's no apology. There was never apology. Never apology.
That's a problem that you're having, and aren't they there to help? And they don't even reply to you. They don't even try to help you with the problem.
Yeah.
To kill somebody and, you know, dreaming about killing somebody and having those thoughts, and they just don't even acknowledge it. So that's pretty bad. And do they ever do anything physical to anybody, like their children? Are they abusive physically?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Okay. But under their care or jurisdiction or under their care, some things happened. And it was due to neglect, and it was due to them forcing people to take care of other people's children when those individuals didn't want to, but they were forced. And that was, I didn't even understand at the time, but it wasn't until I left that I realized they were getting money for it. So they were collecting money to have people's children, but they didn't take care of the children. And they didn't check to make sure that the people that they put in place to take care of them wanted to or were the right guardians. They didn't care. It was, I didn't even know if they were getting money. It was about the money that they were getting. And so under their care, they did not, they didn't ensure that it was a safe environment. It was a safe place because they don't have any feeling. They just wanted the money. And so they managed to convince people to release their children to them, and they would assign people to take care of them, and they were getting the money. And those that were caretakers wasn't getting anything. They wasn't getting anything, period. They had to use their own resources, not knowing that they were actually pocketing money, and those guardians had no say-so. No say-so. And so what that does is it places people in position to nurture when they don't want to nurture. Okay? People's frustrated. They're depressed. They're zombified. They don't want to. They don't even like their own life. So if you're looking after somebody's child and you don't like your own life and you can't, you can't, you don't have a voice, then you're going to take out your anger. You're going to take out, you're not going to be nurturing as you could be if it was under your control, under your aspirations.
Right. Of course. Wow. So then something bad happened with that. What are the houses like that they offer people? I'm just curious about that because somebody gets in a home and they're taking care of the expenses for that, the group, the cult. If they're taking care of it, they could hold that over somebody's head because if they leave, they're going to be homeless.
Correct. Yeah. So it was a real burden. It was a real burden. And, you know, people given a burden without an outlet, without any say-so, and was forced, it doesn't create a nurturing environment for a child.
No, it doesn't. And if they were doing it with that, with the care of that, they're probably doing it in many other little ways, embezzling here and there, and it adds up for them.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask, how long were you in the cult?
8 years.
That is
eight
a long
years
time.
8 years on and off.
Right.
Yeah, 8 years
wow.
on and off. Mm-hmm.
Because you probably make friends. You feel like that's your support system. I can understand it, how you could get sucked into that, because if you leave, you're weighing your options. Well, yeah, I'm going to lose all of my friends that I've made, or, you know, a lot of different things you could be going through a person's mind. I don't know if it was going through your mind, but I can imagine people are somewhat embarrassed because
correct.
They probably raved and raved and raved about this group
correct.
That they're with, and then all of a sudden, oh, no, they're bad, and I have to go, and they don't want to admit that to people. So there's
correct.
Too many reasons, and I understand. You didn't know how to get out, but how did you, though? How did you finally just break away and then know what they are and never go back?
So what happened with me is I had to go to England. I had a trip, I had to go to England. And so I was away from them. And so because I was away from them and I was in England with my family and friends, that kind of rekindled who I was. But that still wasn't enough. But it was the beginning. And so while I was in England, I was there for a couple of weeks, I had a dream. And in this dream, it was like a horror movie. You know, when you're in a house and, the monster's trying to get in and you run to get a phone, you pick up the phone and then the cord has been cut. That scene was
well,
played
I never
in
had
the dream.
That.
Oh, okay.
You sure have.
Like,
you really
movies
dream.
In the 80s and the 90s where the telephone cord was cut.
Oh,
so that happened in the dream. Right. So it's what? Like the monsters are coming. I'm trying to get help. I pick up the phone. It's cut. And I'm like, what am I going to do? And so the next scene was everybody was a zombie. Everybody was a zombie in that ministry. And we was all walking on a street marching. And I mean, like, immaculate marching as if we was a band or as if we was an army, military army, but we was marching. And I saw the leaders, and they were governing everybody. Everybody, I looked to the left, looked to the right, everybody looked the same, and they were just zombified. No expression, no awareness, nothing. They were like a true living dead. And so I was alive. And so in my head, I was telling myself, run. There's a gate. When you see the gate, run for your life. And so that's what I did. And I heard a voice in the dream say to me, run for yeah. I mean, it was bang, bang, bang. And I ran as fast as I could. I spoke to my body. I thought, like, everybody was going to chase me. I thought the leaders were going to chase me. I thought the people were going to chase me. I ran through the gate and got out. I looked back, and nobody missed a beat. Nobody even flinched. They all just kept on marching. Nobody moved. And, of course, the leaders were like prison wardens. That's who they were. They were making sure everybody was in line, and they were like taskmasters. They had a whip. And when I woke up from that dream, I was sweating. I was frantic. I started panicking. I couldn't believe it, because I knew God was speaking to me and saying, get out. Run for your life. Whereas I thought everything was God, God, God. And now I'm actually hearing God say, it's a lie. It's false. I'm not there. There's zombies. And the leadership, they are controlling, and they're taskmasters. And it's a prison. And get out quick. And that's how I knew to leave. If I didn't get that dream, it would have taken a little bit longer. But that dream broke everything. Every chain that was linked to my mind, that they linked it to God. And, of course, I never wanted to be in the opposition to God. Okay? So they kept me submissive because they could spiritually abuse me by using the Bible, by using scriptures, and by using God. The moment they did that, I was pacified. But here God was speaking in a dream, I'm not in agreement with. Run for your life.
Wow, that was so real, the dream. And you probably knew that that meant to get out, because your dream that you described was pretty much how they are in real life. They were zombie-like. They were not flinching. They did not have any emotion. And I just really hand it to you for believing in your own dream, because some people would just say, oh, well, that's just a dream. So,
oh, no, this dream
really
was loud.
It,
I mean, I woke up in a sweat. I mean, I thought it was real. I mean, the dream was very, it was very heavy. It wasn't something I just rolled out, you know, just rolled over bed and said, oh, I just dreamt something. It was so loud, the noise, the thumping. Run for your life. I mean, it was so dramatic. I woke up shaking. I literally woke up shaking, and I was screaming. I was frantic. And, of course, it broke through the brainwashing. And I just kept on saying to myself, it was a lie? Like, God, are you serious? I was screaming. In real life, I was screaming. As soon as I came out of that dream, my brain had just been through, like, a shock. I was in total utter shock. I couldn't believe this thing was breaking. Like, the whole foundation from that dream was breaking. Like, what you thought it was is not. Almost like if you found out that your father is not your father after thinking that for 30 years. It was that dramatic. It was that intense. It was like I built my life around this. And then, of course, the embarrassment. I was like, oh, my God. Everybody was telling me this. How did I not see it? How did I not get it?
Oh, because I was going to ask you that. Were other people recognizing what you were in and warning you, like friends and family? And you, they were.
Yeah.
Oh.
And even their friends and family warned them too. Their friends and family was like, listen, you guys are going in the wrong path. Right? And people would say to them of their peers, bishops and pastors, and, you know, they would say to them, you know, you guys are turning into a cult. And they would tell us this. They would say, oh, Pastor so-and-so from that church, guess what? They think that we're a cult. Isn't that weird? That's what they would say.
Oh. So they didn't really believe that at all. Can you give us a definition of a cult so we just really know what is a cult, the true definition?
Well, I would say a cult is an organization, a group that has a certain belief system that really hinges upon certain characteristics. And it's the traits and the characteristics that really defines it. And that is control, domination, and manipulation. The twisting of words.
Would you say that a cult is something that interferes with your relationship with your family? Let's say that this cult, this group that you were in, had not interfered with your relationship with your family at all. I mean, they didn't care about you having friends. They didn't care who your friends were. They didn't care where you worked and everything. Do you think it would have hurt you as much, or do you think you would have stayed? Or?
Well, even when we think about domestic violence, one of the reasons why it's powerful is because of the isolation. So isolation is a huge part of it in order to control. Because, like I said, that the fact that I went to England, they couldn't control me there. The friends and the family was there, and it reminded me of who I was, because part of being in the cult is that you are cloned. You go through a process of being uniformed like everybody else. You have a language that everybody shares, like the number sixes. And if you hang out with your family, they don't agree with that stuff. So, and they don't share in that language. They don't understand that. So having a language, having a look, sharing the same belief system, but more importantly, being isolated, because without the isolation, you'll always be influenced by family, friends, TV, other resources, which is why they did not want us to go to work. They did not want us to go to college, because the outside influence is very strong. And it can go ahead.
I just want to know a list of, not all of them, but the rules, like the rules that they wanted you to follow, because you mentioned TV. I mean, when you went home, didn't you watch TV, or did you follow their rules? They didn't want you to watch certain things, I'm sure.
Well, we didn't really have a rule about TV. I mean, I myself, even to today, I don't watch TV. I didn't watch TV before them. But they didn't really have a rule about TV, to be honest. But they did have a rule about going to other churches, being involved in other church groups, being with other interest groups. You know, even if we shared the same ideology, they were very jealous of any interaction. TV wasn't an issue. Some of the rules.
What about the way you dress?
We could dress how we wanted to. So I'll tell you one of the things that they did with me, and other people too as well. So it's really about, how can I say it, auto-suggestion. Okay, so this is coming through auto-suggestion, subliminal, okay? So they would dislike what you're wearing and then spiritualize it. So now you've picked up on that. Now you're like, okay, I'm not going to wear that because they don't approve. So they didn't have a rule about it, but they did not agree with it. And so then you had in your mind, and you knew how to obey. So you knew. And so this was why a lot of people didn't see it. And because it was extremely cleverly done. There were some things, there was not rules. But the seeking the approval and the validation was fed really strong. So they could make things up. and they would, you know, if I wore clothes, for example, I'm from England. When I wore clothes that I bought in England, it was a problem. They didn't have a rule about you can't wear clothes from England. But anytime I did, I was criticized in public, okay?
Why?
I was made fun of in public.
Why did they
because
not like
they were right, so they spiritualized it, and the reason being is because it represents my identity, and they don't want me to. They don't want me to keep my identity intact. They want me to become a zombie for them. So one of the ways that you do that is by attacking the individual, attacking their individualism. So anything that was very unique to me, an individual for me and my experience and my background was under attack. So when people do that, you begin to not like yourself. And then you're now working to appease them. And all you're saying to yourself is, there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with me. So I ended up not wearing none of my clothes from England, okay? And I, in fact, I put them all in the bag, okay? This is how deep it got, okay? I thought there was something seriously wrong with my clothes from England, like there was a spirit on there, because that's what they would say, there was a spirit on there, there's a spirit on England, and it's come through the clothes. So, you know, I don't want that, so I'm going to bag everything up, right? I'm going to get rid of everything, and that's what I did. So guess what? Guess what clothes was offered to me? Her clothes. So she took me into her wardrobe, her walk-in closet, and offered me her clothes. I'm a size 6. She's a size 26. And she is like 20 years older than me. So
wow.
Now I'm a young woman wearing an old woman's clothes, and they don't fit me. Okay? But now I don't look like me. And I don't feel like me. And I'm not really me when I'm wearing clothes like that. It doesn't express me no more. So I got depressed very quickly, wearing clothes that I couldn't wear, wearing her clothes that don't fit me. And that's the type of things that would happen. There was no rule about clothes. But very quickly, for each person, she had a way of undermining your ability to choose what you want to wear, what you want to do in life, and to be spiritualized. It was always,
and you know what?
You know, the devil, you know, yeah, it was always spiritualized. And of course, you didn't want that. So you would choose her way. And of course, she knows better, she knows best. And she's adorable and, you know, a mother figure. And of course, you want to appease God. So, you know,
how many were there?
Leaders, people go in and out. Those who are strong don't stay. So there always was a revolving door. But if I throw a number, I would say about 15 leaders. If I say people at one time, I would say about 30 people.
I think that's
you
a lot.
You said revolving door. What do you mean by revolving door?
Some people that were strong, that knew who they were, or who had been involved in that type of cult, could discern what it is very quickly, and they would leave. But we was always told that they were disobedient, and we was always told that they're going to get cancer if they leave. We was told that they would be divorced within like a year. And some of these things happened. And so, you know, it left us feeling afraid to leave because we saw some of this stuff happening to people.
Okay, that is a big one right there. If they are getting brainwashed and they think they're going to get cancer when they leave, they feel like they have to stay. People are holding it in. Like, they feel like something's wrong. They might not be able to pinpoint it, but something's just always off and always wrong under those circumstances. But then they just live their life for years in that situation. It is sad. And I'm so glad that you got out of there and that you are exposing and you will be speaking and getting the word out about this organization and many others, and I noticed that this is going on a lot. Some stars are getting on the TV and talking about cults that they got caught in.
Yeah.
In
correct.
Traps
yes.
of. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard some of them, and I'll tell you this. It's identical. It's almost like all cults are the same. All narcissists are the same once they have a group. Now, there is a psychologist, can't remember his name, but it's on YouTube, and he did a documentary because he himself is a narcissist or been diagnosed as one. And so because he's trying to understand himself, he did a lot of research and became a psychologist. And so he has this spectrum. He figured out a spectrum of people on the narcissism spectrum who are social psychopaths. And so one of the things that he noticed from number one to number 10 is that if they were like a two or three, you know, they were highly functional, you know, and they could use it towards becoming successful. They're very aggressive. You know, they might, you know, push people down the ladder as they go up, that kind of a deal. That will be like a three or something. But he said once they reach number seven, when they reach number seven and they have religious ideology, he says that's when they really are, they are susceptible to start cults. And that's when they are, you know, unaware of what they're doing, but they're doing it and they have no feeling, okay? They have no feeling at all because he was talking about himself. He has no feeling, no emotion. And according to the doctors, when you do an examination of their brains, there is the capacity to feel and to have empathy is actually physically missing in the brain, okay? So they don't have access. So anytime, you know, we would ask, you know, cry out for an apology, you hurt me, this and that happened, there was no remorse, there was nothing. They couldn't give nothing. But more importantly, that was the seven. If it was mixed with religion, he said they became cult leaders. He said when they turn at eight, nine, that's when they have the ability to murder. And they don't always murder with their hands, but they can instruct people to actually do it, and they can convince and manipulate and be very conniving to get people to do it for them.
Wow. To kill themselves.
Yeah.
And you know what? I
really
hear that
dangerous.
Is a crime. That is a crime
that
now.
That is.
So,
yeah.
If, you know, you could get that proof. That would really stop them because I saw that girl on the news that was just telling her friend, it's not really her friend, but like a ex-boyfriend to kill himself, and he did, and she, I don't know if she ended up getting convicted, but she was in court over that, and it was serious.
I remember, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you
no
remember the
say,
outcome of that?
Mm-hmm. No, I believe she did get sentenced, though. I believe she did get sentenced. To what extent, I don't know, but I believe she got sentenced.
Because
that was terrible. Young boy.
Yeah.
And that's how they do it, is through
yeah.
auto-suggestion. They have an ability to suggest some things, and they know your weaknesses, and that's how they're able to control you. And, you know, and they suggest
okay.
things.
It's really a very big manipulation, and I still don't know, though. Do they know if they're doing the manipulating, or do they think they're just doing their work and it is the right way? And because you really brought up something that I just did not know, that they are missing that part of the brain that shows emotion and, well, not all emotion, but regret or feeling sorry.
Yeah.
They're
empathy.
Missing that part of
yeah.
the brain. So they
yeah.
really are missing that. So then they probably, maybe they don't think they're doing anything bad.
Yeah. I don't think they think they're doing anything bad because I've confronted them. When I had that dream, I confronted them. And all she could do is argue that with me and just defend herself. and just put it on everybody else. So she would reflect it and say, us, and it's not her. But there was no remorse at all. I'm sorry?
It feel good to get it feel good for you to finally, you know, confront her and confront them. Did that feel good?
It did. It was a brave move. I started out by calling, and I was submissive for 1 hour. I kid you not. 1 hour, I stayed on the phone, and I was like, yes, ma'am, while she was just ranting and saying it's my fault, it's everybody else's fault, and there's something wrong with us. Because I said to her, why is it that people can't make their own decisions? And she said, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not holding anybody. Everybody can do what they want. And I was like, no, why is it that when so-and-so needs some clothes, you decide to go to Goodwill and buy them some clothes? Why can't they work and buy their clothes? And then she just kept on going in. And I'm like, no. So I said, I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to argue. So for 1 hour, I let her say whatever she wanted to say. I even put the phone down, walked away because I couldn't handle it. I came back. She was still speaking. And then I said, you know what? I don't even know why I'm even scared anymore. I'm not. So then after 1 hour, me and her argued for 1 more hour. When I say this was the first time I had really spoken up, we went toe-to-toe. I mean, I was shouting. I'm not even lying. I was shouting. I was screaming at her. I've never done that before, but I was trying to get my point across, and I was not about to let her overtalk me. I said, enough is enough. I went down the line, this and that and this and that, and she just wasn't having it. And I just said, so we was on the phone for 2 hours.
Wow.
And I just said, and my heart, to be honest, my heart, I know it sounds crazy, but my heart was, if you can just show me there's a real reason, then I won't leave. I wasn't even trying to leave. I got that dream, came back, and I wasn't trying to leave. I just wanted some answers, and she couldn't give it to me. So I was like, that's it. I've got to leave now. I've got to leave. So even after that dream, if they had, I would have probably stayed because it was too much of a shock for me. But she just wouldn't give me nothing. She gave me nothing for me to say there's hope. There was no hope.
Is this called
like,
City
wow.
of Hope? I have to get this name of this place because I'm looking it up right now. Did you say it was called City of Hope Church?
No, it's called A. It's called A. Ray of Hope. If you put Ray of Hope, you're gonna get this ministry.
City of Hope. Oh no!
So yeah,
okay,
so it's gonna be
you.
A.
Ray of Hope. Okay.
Ministry.
And are they
Michelle Lewis?
Okay. It's good that you tell it again and all the details, so anybody who's listening doesn't go there by accident. A Ray of Hope Ministries. And
correct.
Can you give me the lady's name again?
Yes, Michelle Lewis.
Okay, and is this in Georgia or all around the country?
Correct. Correct. Their base is in Georgia.
Right. Okay.
But they move in different places.
And but you never did get housed by them? Did you always keep your own residence?
No, I was housed through them.
Okay.
And that's
what
part,
are,
that's, and that's
what
part,
are they
that's
like?
Part.
Yeah, that's how they really get you to probably stay.
Yeah.
And
that
so
would,
do
yeah,
you have to
him,
do a lot would, for them? You have to work for them to get the rent paid, to pay the rent.
Well, you're part. So it's like you're part of the ministry. You're there for training. It's a training ground. It's an apostolic prophetic training ground. So you know it falls in line with who I am, my calling, my assignment, and it was training and mentoring. And that's what I was looking for. But Mm-hmm.
Are they on
so,
social
yeah, there
media?
There was times I had my own residences. And there was times when I lived in their ministerial, they called it ministerial homes.
What was it like, the homes that they offered?
Oh, the homes are beautiful. I mean, that there's nothing. The homes are beautiful. Beautiful homes. Beautiful, clean.
So they needed a lot of money to have beautiful homes to provide.
Correct.
Confidential environment. I found them. I don't like that word. You know, I've never heard of church type people use that kind of wording. And psychotherapist services is a group of counselors and psychotherapists.
Oh, no, that's not it. That's not it. I don't think that's it. Are you sure you got the right one? It would say the leaders are Michelle and James Lewis.
Okay.
Because you're going to find a lot of a Ray of Hope. Yeah, Ray of Hope is very popular. So to get the right one, you would have to do Michelle and James Lewis.
Okay.
Michelle and James Lewis. Yeah.
Now, because right now it has been an hour and we forgot to, in the middle of our show, do a shout out for you so the listeners can know where to find you, because there might be somebody listening right now that needs help. So where could they find you if they do need to contact you?
Oh, absolutely. They can reach out to me on Facebook. You can reach out to me on Facebook, and I'll be honored to support you. I also have some books. I've written 5 books on this subject matter. If you're looking for support material. Yeah.
Oh, Mercy, I would love to feature one of your books for our book club that we're starting, our Life Lasts for Happiness book club. Yes, wouldn't that be great, Johnny?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because we will read it, and then we blog about it, and then we move on to the next book, but all of that can offer a lot of promotion for whoever the author is that we choose. This month we're doing our psychic counselor. We're going to read one of her 5 books, and then we would like to do that for you down the road. I find it to be very interesting. I'm sure it is a very interesting read.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can definitely do that. Not a problem. I'm actually on Amazon. They can get it on Amazon or they can get it through me.
What is it called?
But my name is Mercy Miles Jenkins.
Okay. And
yeah, I'm on Amazon.
You now are married. You're now married?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Correct.
So you got out of there. Mm-hmm. It was a long road, but you did it. You got out of there. And now you are the perfect person to help anybody who needs to get out of a cult, because you know the signs and you can see how far deep they're in by just simply talking to them, because you've been through it. So I really admire what you're doing, and it takes a lot of courage to expose something like this. But thank goodness. Where do you live now?
I'm in Massachusetts.
Okay, so you're pretty far away from Georgia. Not real far, but, just take care. Watch your back, because these people sound really serious. If they don't even care for somebody, I think that they'd rather have the person dead than leave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you got out of there.
You
got married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you wrote 5 books, though. 5 books.
Right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And you're currently a social worker?
No, I'm actually a pastor.
Oh, you are? Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm actually a pastor now, so I actually have a church. Yeah. I actually have a church myself.
I was going to ask you if that led you away from God. You know, I was so worried that it was going to lead you away from God's word.
It did. It did.
For a while.
It did for 5.5 years. And then I came back, and when I came back, he said, you still have a call in your life. And he began to repair me, heal me, and, remove the unforgiveness. So I've forgiven them. I know they're great people on the outside. I just really have, I'm really, pitiful towards them for what's going on with their health, because I really believe this is actually a mental health issue. I think they're convinced that they're really supporting people, and they're very unaware that they are like charlatans. They're very unaware that they are robbing people from their destiny. I don't believe they're aware that they're scam artists. I mean, that's what they are. But I don't believe, like, most scam artists know they're playing a game. But somehow, I don't know, I feel like they don't really understand it, but they're actually doing it, though.
Oh, yes. You know what? They've got to know a little bit, unless they're completely non-human. I mean, they have to plan it out. They have to know where they're going to get their money from. They have to, interview the people and find out all the... They have to interview each person to find out their weaknesses. Why else would they need to know? I mean, I go to a normal church. Nobody has found out anything about me. You know, I just go enjoy it, and then I'm free to go. This is just completely different. People, everybody who's listening, watch out for this kind of thing, because they can ruin your life and take you away from your family. Did you have to spend your holidays with them?
Yeah, they wouldn't allow me to. So one of the things that I did when I left is we went on vacations. We traveled internationally. We had family cookouts. We would eat out at restaurants. We did all of that stuff because we needed to really recuperate and do all the regular things that most people did, that, you know, most people take for granted. But we did those things.
I have a question. You said that you got your life back. You went to go see them for a few weeks. What made you go see them for a few weeks?
Because I was trying to see if they would understand that they're really hurting people. And that's what I said to them, that you're really hurting people, and what can we do?
No.
I was coming from the stump. Go ahead.
You said that you went to see your family for a few weeks, and that's what led you to have to go see your family. Did something bad happen with your family? Or?
Yeah, something happened, and I had to get back home. But I really believe when I was looking back at it that God had to get me out. And that was the only way he can get me away from them. That he was using that situation like a family need, like with my siblings, and that allowed me to get away. Because, you know, they couldn't stop me from going, because otherwise they normally would have discouraged me.
I want to know, what type of things did your family and very close friends notice that made them leery of the group?
Oh, I didn't look the same. I didn't dress the same. I didn't think the same. I made everything everything was spiritualized. Everything was like, for example, my friend, I'm the godmother of her child. And she was having a party or something. And it's normal just to go, right? And especially if you're the godparent, right? I made this whole big thing up, like I couldn't go. I made this whole big thing up, like I couldn't go. And it was some type of thinking, like, oh, I'm not allowed to be around people. Oh, spiritually, I'll be contaminated. It was some type of thinking, like it was their way of thinking, but they, you know, I started to breed that type of thinking, like, oh, I can't be around people, oh, something bad's gonna happen, you know. So I started to hyperventilate, and so I would tell people, oh no, I can't be there, this is not my time, it's not my season to be around you, you know, which doesn't make any sense,
right?
Time or season.
So things like that. Wow. What, Johnny?
That's an interesting word. Wow.
Mm-hmm. It is. But, you know, the main thing is you got out. And you know what? I bet you really relished those vacations and doing things that you hadn't done for so many years with the people you really love. And yeah, and then so that's one good thing about it. You see, you're seeing the world and your life differently. You really must be grateful, and you must show a lot of gratitude. And now you tell me that you're a pastor. I love that. I think that's just absolutely wonderful. And now look at the life, and you're going to be able to touch so many people's lives with your testimony.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, because that's a very interesting part, like you said. You know, for a while, I stopped praying. I stopped believing that there is a God, and I totally went off. But God really brought me back so that I would understand that he still exists. I just had a very bad experience. And he also showed me how he was trying to rescue me over the years. It wasn't like he wasn't. He was trying to rescue me. And I just couldn't see it because of the control was so thick. I couldn't see it.
That's so sweet, though, that you saw the signs after and that God never was letting you down. He was trying.
Yeah. Yeah. And he sent people to me, and they would tell me it was just off.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing your story. And we're the first Life Laughter Happiness. This is the first to hear you come out and just boldly say their name, and that is a big step today.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Thank
you. All right, will you shout out, Barbara?
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And
thank you.
I want everybody to be able to find you. So go to Mercy's Facebook page. I just want to make sure that I'm spelling it properly. M-E-R.
Yeah.
T-E-Y?
Yeah, M-E-R-C-Y, Miles, M-Y-L-E-S, hyphen, Jenkins.
Okay, on Facebook is the best way to find you then, or do you have also your congregation website?
Yeah, they can also go to Mercy Miles Jenkins. So it's my name, mercymilesjenkins.com.
Okay, wow, wonderful. I'm going to go check that out too and watch for my name because I'm going to put a request in to be your friend on Facebook as well. And
okay,
if you ever
awesome.
Need to come back here and talk about anything new discoveries
yeah.
on the subject, that would be so great. And we look forward to having you take part in our book club too. So, listen,
awesome.
Thank you.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. I just came up with the idea and we are just starting. We haven't even read our first book yet. So, I'm excited about that.
No.
It'll keep me reading, you know, it'll make me read.
Right.
That's for sure. So, everybody, if you would like to hear this show again, find it anytime on our YouTube channel, Life, Laughter, Happiness YouTube. And while you're there, don't forget to subscribe and visit us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We always post, usually daily, and we would love to hear from you and give us some feedback. And also, we have started our Roku TV channel, or our TV channel on Roku, Life, Laughter, Happiness, Learn, and go check that out too. We're excited about that. And I guess that's it. Yeah, so thank you so much for being here. That was really interesting.
You're so welcome.
And it was so good to get to know you, Mercy, and, you know, good luck and God bless you.
Thank you.
In your future endeavors. And so you have another community that is good, and we like freedom, don't we, Johnny? We like to be free. So anytime, you're a part of our Life, Laughter, Happiness community now.
Yay!
Thank you
awesome.
So much. Yes. All right. Okay. Thank you, Johnny. Thank you, Johnny. And for
thank
all that you
Johnny.
Do.
Everyone.
Goodbye, Barbara.
All right.
Take care, you guys.
Bye.